Good evening. It's good to see each one here tonight. We are grateful for your presence. We have visitors back with us again this evening, and we're grateful for you being here. Open your Bibles with me, if you would, tonight to Colossians chapter 3. Colossians chapter 3 is where we are going to be taking the text for our lesson this evening. When you hear the term whatever, what does it make you think of? Now, if you are the parent of teenagers, it may make you think of something different than it might otherwise. I don't know if it's still the case or not, but back when I was growing up, whatever was the phrase that would most quickly get you slapped as anything else. But God in Colossians chapter 3 is going to utilize through the Apostle Paul a couple of whatever statements. And I want us to hone in on what is said here in the latter section of Colossians 3 this evening. Because it is a very interesting format, a very interesting layout, and a very important series of lessons that Paul is going to distribute to the church at Colossae under the umbrella of whatever. Two different phrases or two different verses that are going to be utilized in the last sections of Colossians chapter 3. The first one is found in verse number 17, where there Paul says, "And whatever you do, in word or deed, do all in the name of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks to God the Father through him." Now, you go back in the context to verse number 12, and he's talking about the things that we are supposed to put on, the things that we are supposed to have as a part of us. And he continues with things like tender mercies and kindness and humility and meekness and long-suffering, bearing with one another, forgiving one another. And above all of these, he says, verse 14, put on love. All of these attributes are supposed to be a part of us, and they are supposed to come after we take off or remove from us all of those evil things that he talks about in the first part of chapter 3. But then you come down to verse 17, and he says, whatever you do, in word or in deed, in what you say or in what you do, do all in the name of the Lord. You drop down a few more verses in chapter 3 to verse 23, and there he makes the statement, and whatever you do, do it heartily as to the Lord and not to men. So here you have two different statements within the same context. The first one is, whatever you do, whether it's in what you say or in what you do, do all in the name of the Lord. Do it all by the authority or under the authority of the Lord. You're to do it with the right heart in place, with the right actions in place, with the right principles in place, giving thanks to God the Father through Him. And then, whatever you do, do it heartily. The idea of heartily is with all your might. So whatever you do, whether it's in what you're saying or what you're doing, you do it under the authority of the Lord with all of your might. As to the Lord and not to men. What is interesting, or at least maybe the most interesting to me in these two statements, is that sandwiched between them and then actually extending a couple more verses down into chapter 4 and in verse 1, you have instructions that cover every individual in some way, shape, or form that is on the face of the earth. And it is interesting to note that the instructions that are discussed, beginning in verse 18 and going down through chapter 4, verse 1, are the instructions that with each of the individual categories, more often than not, we have the most trouble with. And so, tonight, I want us to think about whatever. And what whatever means, and how it is inclusive of who we are and of the roles and the responsibilities that we have in our lives. Because sometimes we have a tendency to make whatever just apply when we're in the church building. Or to make whatever just apply when I want it to apply. When I want it to be a part of the way that I make my choices and my actions. I want you to see some of the ways that the Apostle Paul tonight talks about the importance of whatever we do. Whether it's in word, whether it's in deed, doing it with all of our might as to the Lord and not to men. So we're going to examine this evening verse 18 of chapter 3 through chapter 4, verse 1. And we're going to notice six different categories. Now, you know me. If we're going to get through this evening, we're not going to spend a great deal of time examining each of these six categories. But I want us to see the emphasis of the point, because if we understand what Paul is saying in these six categories and why these emphases are found here in this place, then we can also make proper application to all of the other places as well in our lives. So six areas that the Apostle Paul talks about when it comes to whatever we do. I want you to notice as we go through this tonight, I took Paul's order. So I'm not picking on anybody in the order in which these things occur. So wives, don't blame me for you being first, because Paul put you first. And don't worry, men, we get a double portion in this. So we'll get to that in just a minute. But as you come to verse 18, there Paul says, "Wives, submit to your own husbands as is fitting in the Lord." The principle that in our day and time is forbidden to speak of. And yet Paul talks about it here. Remember, whatever you do in word or deed, do all in the name of the Lord. And whatever you do, do it heartily. Wives, submit to your own husbands as is fit in the Lord. The word here, submit, means to voluntarily subject oneself. It does not mean to be placed in slavery. It does not mean to be placed in bondage or servitude or lesser status. Rather, the idea of submitting here means that you voluntarily subject yourself to your husband. Not because he's better than you. You know, wise husbands often refer to their wives as their better half, for good reason. But because God has given him authority, because God has given him responsibility, responsibility to you, responsibility to your children, responsibility to the family in every sense of leadership and of making sure that they're moving the right direction. That's his responsibility. And as such, the wife, if she is going to be what God wants her to be, has to be willing to subject herself. Now that does not mean, nor is it anywhere insinuated, that the husband is supposed to be a little dictator that just runs around giving orders and puffing himself up as to how great and how important he is. I've seen a few husbands that kind of acted that way. That's not the intention at all. But rather that they work together as a team and as a unit. But you know, In every unit, I don't care whether you're talking about a sports team or whether you're talking about a military unit or whether you're talking about a government or a family unit, somebody's in charge. Somebody's got to be in charge. God gave the orders about who was in charge. It's the husband. It is designed to be the husband. Now, for us husbands, sometimes we don't like being in charge because that means we're held responsible when things go bad. Sorry, guys. That's the job that's put on us. Submit yourselves unto your own husbands as it is fit. It is interesting that that word that is translated as "it is fit" comes from a Greek word that means it is proper or it is necessary. It's not an option. God says it is necessary in the Lord. So wives, whatever you do, in word or deed, do it with all of your might. All right, now that we've got that out of the way, verse 19. On the one hand, you've got the submissive statement concerning the wives, but in verse number 19, Paul is going to turn it over and talk about the husband as well. He says, "Husbands, love your wives and do not be bitter toward them." Now, I've already had two or three different statements and comments over this particular section. That being said, I'm not going to tell you what they were. That being said, husbands, whatever you do in word or deed, do it heartily. And yes, I know I'm mixing the two phrases because it's fitting and they're meant to work together. Whatever you do in word or deed, do all in the name of the Lord and do it heartily as to the Lord. So husbands, love your wives. The word here for love is the agape form that is utilized here. But it is an interesting tense that is utilized. It is the term that given in the tense that means a continuous action. This is not something that is a punctuated instance. It takes place here, and it takes place here, and it takes place here. But rather, the love that you have for your wife is something that is a continuous part of everything that you do. You see, we talk about the importance of submission on the part of the wife, but if I'm putting forth the agape form of love that I'm supposed to, that means I love my wife and I put her first in the choices that I make. That I put her first in the level of importance of the things that we're going to do as our family or that we're going to have to face as a family. You know, so many times husbands love their wives when it's convenient, and then husbands very selfishly think only of themselves the rest of the time. And that's not the way God designed our relationship with our wives to be. In the same way that the wife is supposed to submit to the husband is supposed to always be thinking about what is best for his wife. And you know, if those two sides are working together, there's never going to be a question about whether or not the wife loves her husband or whether or not the husband loves her wife, his wife, and whether or not they're working together and whether or not they're focused on the same thing. Because they're both going to be interested in what is best. But then you have the statement that seems somewhat out of place at the end of verse 19. Because he says there, "And be not bitter toward them." Be not bitter. The word there in the Greek is pikraino. And it means, as Rogers and Rogers will put it in their lexicon, The verb has the idea of being sharp, harsh, or bitter. It speaks of friction caused by impatience and thoughtless nagging. Husbands, don't be bitter toward your wives. An example of this would be the husband that comes home from work and says, "Where's my dinner? I've worked hard all day and I've come home. Where's my dinner?" Or the husband who is always displeased with the way that his wife keeps the house, or the way that his wife does this, or the way that his wife does that. Husbands, love your wives. Do not be bitter toward them. Do not cause friction by impatience and thoughtlessness. Rather, think about what is important for them. Think about what it is that they've gone through all day. Again, the difference between selfishness and selflessness. Yes, the husband is the head of the house, but he is not the selfish dictator, if he's the man that he is supposed to be, over the things that take place in the house. He works with his wife as a team. He loves her. He cares about her. And he puts her first. In the third place, come down to verse number 20. And there, Paul speaks of the children. And he says, "Children, obey your parents in all things, for this is well-pleasing to the Lord." It has often been bemoaned the levels of rebelliousness and lack of discipline that is found in kids these days. I think every generation has had a version of kids these days. It's just a lot easier to see it when we're the ones that aren't the kids anymore. And yet it is true that we live in an age and in a society where increasingly there is no respect for authority. There is no respect for the parents or for those who are in charge in various aspects of life, whether it be school, whether it be government, whether it be any other facet of life, on the job. Respect for authority. And yet, here Paul talks about the importance of children being obedient to their parents. And you know, we've talked about the whatever statements. But did you notice what he says here in verse number 20? Obey your parents in all things. In whatever. For this is well-pleasing. The word there means commendable to the Lord. Want to know how to be commended before God? Children, obey your parents. But you don't have to listen anymore once you turn 18, right? Do we stop being children just because we've turned 18? 21 or 25 or 50? Now granted, we have to make our own choices. We have to forge our own paths. We have to make our own decisions and deal with our own consequences as we get older. But especially for an individual that has godly parents who want nothing more for that child than to go to heaven, there should always be a place that they can turn to for advice, for strength, and for guidance. But if we're going to turn there, we should also be wise enough to listen, should we not? Parents do not lose their ability to have influence, or at least they shouldn't, just because our children cross an arbitrary line at which society says they're old enough to make their own decisions. Children, obey your parents in all things. But then you come down to verse number 21. And dads, I said, we get a double portion. And there's a reason for this. He comes back and he says, fathers, remember, we're talking about in whatever you do, do it with all your might. Whether it's in word or in deed, do it in the name of the Lord. Fathers, do not provoke your children lest they become discouraged. The idea here of to provoke is to irritate, to excite, or to rile up. Lest they become discouraged. The term here means to lose heart. To be without courage. Have you ever seen the father that is so overbearing and so forceful that he destroys his own kids? He's so overwhelms them. He is one that is over the top with his expectations. They can't possibly succeed enough to make him happy. It is that kind of father that Paul here is talking about. Talking about the one who is excessively confrontational. We're not talking about a father who is trying to teach and to instruct and to help and to prepare his child for what the future holds and for service to God and things of that nature. And if there's anybody that knows, it's us fathers, that we're not perfect and we make a lot of mistakes. We fail in many different ways. We wish we didn't. There is a difference between teaching and instructing, and instead being overbearing and harsh, being ones who can't ever be satisfied, being ones who do not work out of love and affection, but rather out of a sense of overbearing. Fathers, don't provoke your children, lest they become discouraged. Instead, teach them to have courage. Teach them to stand up for what is right. Teach them what it means to be a man or to be a woman in service to God. Teach them what it means to have an obedient faith. Let them see you do what you want them to do. And you'll never be perfect. But you know, part of being able to set the right example, and I have heard some say the opposite of this, and to be honest, it saddens me greatly when I hear it. Folks, one of the things that our children need to see is they need to see Dad say, I'm sorry when he's messed up. They need to see Dad repent when he's done wrong. They need to see Dad when he fails. Not just when he succeeds. That's a hard thing to let others see many times. It's a hard thing to admit sometimes. But you know what that does in the hearts of your children? It doesn't demean you. Instead, It raises you up as someone who can understand, as someone who can empathize, and as someone who has been there in ways that can help when they face those same problems and those same trials. Because let's face it, for many of us, the things that our children face and the problems that they're going to have to deal with come from us. They're handed down in many different ways. How do we deal with them? What expectations do we set on our children? Fathers, provoke not your children to anger. And then you come to verse 22. And in verses 22 through 25, through the end of chapter 3, you have him talking about servants. And certainly this particular area applies to us today, even though we don't have the same kind of bond service that they had back then. We certainly see the importance of the way in which we live our lives in the work that we do and in the way that we interact with others. Notice what he says beginning in verse 22. He says, "Bondservants, obey in all things your masters according to the flesh, not with eye service as men pleasers, but in sincerity of heart, fearing God. And whatever you do, do it heartily as to the Lord and not to men, knowing that from the Lord you will receive the reward of the inheritance, for you serve the Lord Christ. But he who does wrong will be repaid for what he has done, and there is no partiality." When you are working for someone, obey in all things your masters according to the flesh. Not with eye service as men pleasers. The idea of eye service is only on the outside. You know, on the outside I'm doing what I'm told, and on the inside I'm cussing the guy's guts out. On the inside, I'm whining and I'm complaining and I'm bitter and I don't like it and I don't want to do it. You know, it's kind of like the kid that's being told to clean up their room. Your kids probably didn't have this trouble. When my kids are told to clean their room, the first thing we have to say is, "And there will be no fighting." Because when they don't want to do it, you know the first thing that they do? "You were supposed to pick this up, and you were supposed to pick this up, and he's not helping me, and blah, 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 blah." And the job that should have taken 10 minutes takes an hour and a half. Whatever you do, do it heartily, as to the Lord, and not to men. Do it with sincerity of heart, Paul says, fearing God. When we work, we work hard. We work to the best of our ability. When we work, we do what is expected of us. We are not lazy. We don't try to skate by with the least that can be asked of us. But rather, we give it everything we've got. Not because we're seeking the pleasing statements of men. Not because we are ones who are looking for some kind of reward here. But because it's what God expects us to do. You see the statement in verse number 24. He says, "Knowing that from the Lord you will receive the reward of the inheritance, for you serve the Lord Christ." He who does wrong will be repaid for what he does. You mean there's going to be a standard of reward and punishment even in my job and the way that I do my job? God cares about how I work? Yeah, he does. But what if I'm the boss? I can do whatever I want, right? Because I'm the guy in charge. You see, this is where those chapter divisions become pesky and troublesome. Because chapter 4 verse 1 continues this very discussion. He's not done yet. Because chapter 4 verse 1 says, "Masters, Give your bondservants what is just and fair, knowing that you also have a master in heaven. Did you know it does not matter how far up the ladder you get, or if you are the top rung of the physical ladder of the greatest company or of the greatest government on the face of the earth, you still answer to somebody who is greater than you. So masters, bosses, give your servants or your employees what is just and fair. Why? Because you have a master in heaven. And you desire the same thing from him, right? How does that passage go? You know, my mother used to always make us quote it. In all things, whatever you would that men should do to you, do ye even so to them. We call it what? The golden rule. Masters, give your servants what is just and fair. Why? Because you want the same thing from your master in heaven. And whatever you do, in word or deed, do all in the name of the Lord, giving thanks to God the Father through Him. And whatever you do, do it heartily, as to the Lord and not to men. You know, we could talk about, and Paul could have talked about, a lot of other avenues that fall within the confines of this whatever you do comment. But isn't it interesting that the ones that are laid out here are so often the ones that people struggle with the most? Wives, submit to your husbands. Husbands, love your wives at all times, and don't be harsh and bitter and selfish toward them. Children, obey your parents. Fathers, don't be overbearing to incite or to provoke your children and make them discouraged. Servants, work hard. Do what is expected of you. Do it with all of your might, and do it with joy as you are serving the Lord and not men. And masters, be just and fair. You know, in Ecclesiastes chapter 9 and in verse number 10, there Solomon says, whatever your hand finds to do, do it with all your might. How are we living our lives? With whatever? In whatever we do, are we thinking about the choices that we're making? Are we thinking about who it is we're truly trying to please, to honor, to serve, and to obey? Or are we more wrapped up in ourselves, in what I want, and what's going to make me happy? What it is that I want to do and how it is that I want to live, or what it is that I deserve or I am owed. How are we living with whatever we do? In whatever relationship we're in, whether we're the parent, whether we're the child, whether we're the husband or the wife, whether we're the worker or whether we're the boss. How do we live with whatever we do. God has given us a blueprint for the way that we should analyze and the way that we should think about the choices that we're making and the way that we interact with one another. Will we utilize it? Will we use it in a way that glorifies and honors Him, or will we ignore them to our own peril? Maybe you're one here tonight who needs to respond to the Lord's invitation. Maybe it's in obedience to the gospel. Maybe it's in need to come back to Him and to get your life back on the right track with Him. If we can assist you this evening, the Lord's invitation is always open. But if we can help you right now, why not come as we stand and sing the song of invitation?